Hi, welcome to the 13th Warehouse. I'm Vicki.
And I'm Kim.
And this is Doug with the IMDb Synopsis, Season 1, Episode 9, Regrets. A prison, a new warden, or a charismatic preacher inmate may have an artifact related to a string of prisoner suicides accompanied by hallucinations. Pete and Micah search for the artifact as an approaching tropical storm accentuates its influence. Created by Brent Mote and Jane Espenson, written by Tamara Beecher and staff writer Benjamin Robb, and directed by Michael W. Watkins. Original air date, September 1st, 2009.
You're going to jail, missy!
What are you talking about?
That explains suicides up in Riverton. We are off to see the warden.
You use soap on a rope.
Hey, I don't judge your personal hygiene products, although you might want to invest into some moisturizers. You're a little dry around the nose.
Oh, you want to swap beauty tips? Then we can talk about the hair that's sprouting from your shoulders, your nose, and your, ears.
Ow!
As we heard in the synopsis, this is Season 1, Episode 9, Regrets. We started with Kim's notes last week, and fortunately, we're starting with my notes this week because Kim jumped ahead and took notes on Episode 10. So she's going to be winging it. She did watch the episode, but she didn't watch it as recently as she would have watched it to do the podcast.
Sorry, guys.
Believe me, I've done that too. What do you think my happiest moment of this episode was?
Your boy. Your boy. Your main squeeze fun jella.
That's right. And I do not remember this at all. At all. I must have missed it or something, because why would I not remember? I remembered there was an episode with Joe and Zane not playing Joe and Zane. I remembered that. Right. I didn't remember much about what it was about. But how did I not remember this?
Yeah, I remember this, but at one point I wasn't watching Eureka, so I didn't know the characters and stuff like that.
I must have somehow skipped over this. That's all I could think of. There's no way I would have forgotten this episode. So anyway, the artifact of the week is Warden Matthews' Quartz Cross. This neutralizes the effects of the Riverton Maximum Security Prison, but only when placed in the warden's office. This is a kind of a weird episode because they are not retrieving an artifact and bringing it back to the warehouse. It turns out the building is the artifact. The building is what's causing everything. And they have to find an artifact and put it back where it belongs in the building to stop what's going on.
Yes, but then they took something from him. What was his name? Your friend.
Is it Joe Hill or John Hill? I forgot.
I could have sworn they took something from him and put it in the bag when it sparked.
Where'd you get that necklace?
Well, you could say it's always been with me.
Or you could say where you got it.
The object itself is of no importance. Its value lies in what it represents. What some demand that we consume ourselves with remorse for our supposed sin. Robberus reminds us to transcend the cycle and walk the path to enlightenment. I was and am his instrument on earth, and with my hands it is his will and not mine that is done. To feel remorse is to shame God.
It didn't spark. That was the lightning going on.
Oh.
And I wrote that down because, again, they take an artifact, both of them together, put it in this bin, and it didn't spark.
I don't know why I thought it sparked.
Well, it did. It looked like it sparked because there was lightning going on. And maybe they confused the lightning with a spark. I don't know. Maybe there was a little spark, but it wasn't a spark like we usually see.
Yeah.
You know, and we all know that if there's no spark or if there's a little spark, there's something else they have to be looking for.
Right.
So, once again, the artifact didn't spark. And they go about their business, you know, oh, we're all set now. You're not going to have any more suicides.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that annoyed me. And the B plot, which I'm going to go through quickly because I didn't enjoy it, but if you have something to say about it, certainly jump in. But the B plot was Claudia wanted to change a light bulb.
Okay, yeah.
Claudia wants to change a light bulb. She uses an artifact, some kind of lab coat. Somebody named Volta's lab coat. So uninterested, I couldn't care whose lab coat it was.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to magnetize things to her.
Artie? Hi! Huh, funny story. So I kind of, tried to fix this light bulb even though you expressly told me not to, and man, have I learned my lesson. You're so right about this place, you just never know what to expect. okay, you're pissed. Can we move past that part for now and get to the part where you get me down from here?
It makes her able to climb up the steel, what do you call those?
Steel beams.
Yeah, the beams. Words are hard.
Right.
The steel beams of the warehouse to get to the top to change the light bulb. Now, I guess she breaks the light bulb at one point. Or I don't even know because I paid little attention to this. But she gets up, and I guess the more things attach to her, the more magnetized the coat becomes, which right. means at some point, Artie tells her that the more things that keep flying at her, the stronger the magnetization gets. It can collapse the warehouse on her and him.
It wouldn't be Volta's lab coat that you're wearing.
All part of the hilarious story. I should really tell you when I'm back on planet Earth.
The reason, Claudia, that Volta's lab coat is in the warehouse is because Volta couldn't control its magnetic field. As you may have noticed, each metallic object that it connects to makes the coat stronger and stronger.
That explains so much.
So she's up there and things are flying at her and you can hear the warehouse creaking and everything. So Artie saves her. And I don't even know what he did. He shot something in the air, and I don't know what all these things were that he was using. And then he puts a mat down so she falls on it. I didn't enjoy any of that.
He tried to demagnetize her, and he had to tell her to make sure she takes it off right away.
Right.
I thought the longer she wore the coat, the more magnetized she became. I thought it was the way she wore it, because it looked like the coat was huge on her. And then all of a sudden, it started fitting and started getting more tighter and tighter and tighter.
Right, that's what he said. And maybe I didn't understand the way he was explaining it. But I guess it just gets stronger the more things that attract to it.
Right, yeah.
So I don't know if it got stronger and made more things attract to it, or as things attract to it, it made it stronger. I don't know which way that went. But it was just a lot of time filled, it seemed like. Now that Claudia's here, they always seem to have a B-plot. But this one just seemed like fluff. It was just to kill time, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe you liked it better than I did, but I didn't like it at all.
I mean, it was okay. It's just another, they're in the warehouse for a reason. Why would you put it on?
Exactly.
Through this, probably the whole series, I'm going to repeat myself on this one. Why would you put something on? Why would you touch something? Because it's in the warehouse. So what part of this thing nobody understanding, but hey, this is what they do.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently in this prison, there's been a rash of suicides. And we see one as the show opens.
It was an accident. It was an accident.
It was 17. It was prom night.
I'm so...
Lee?
Sorry.
Lee, hey, what are you doing?
No, talk to Doc. I got it. I have to get away from her.
As we go through the episode, we see that all of the suicides and hallucinations have to do whatever the person feels guilty about. So the guy Lee killed the girl in a drunk driving accident. That was his hallucination when he was at a bar and she asked him if he wanted a drink.
Want to do a shot, Doc?
Sorry, I don't drink.
Sure you do.
Do I know you? Had a drop in 5 years.
Probably because you drank enough for a lifetime the night you killed me. You killed me. You killed me.
Yes.
The doctor had guilt about not seeing the suicide warning signs in Lee.
You could have helped me, doctor.
I'm sorry. I tried. I did.
I thought you were my friend. You ignored the warning signs. You let me die, doctor.
Micah, of course, has guilt about the death of Sam, especially since she just received the results of the internal investigation on his death, which she hadn't opened yet. Pete has guilt about the death of his father, because if you remember way back, I don't know if it was the first or second episode, Pete was talking about his vibes and how the day his father died, he didn't want him to go to work.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He had a vibe, but he didn't want his father to think he was a coward, so he never said anything.
Right.
He has guilt about that, even though he was a little kid. And the warden has guilt because the prison's out of control and all of the suicides began when she arrived. So all these people are affected. Micah begins hearing Sam almost immediately when she gets to the prison.
Right.
And he accuses her of killing him.
Yeah.
He was kind of mean. I know. We've seen him before, and we know that's not really him. But, and not too much later, Pete sees his father, who accuses him of letting him die.
Yeah.
Those were kind of unsettling, because obviously a father would know that the kid was a kid.
Right.
These aren't representations of the real people. It still must be shaking to see the people that you love behave that way, blaming you for everything.
You should have warned me, Petey. Dad? If you knew I was never coming home, why didn't you say something? I was a kid. It was just a feeling. I was afraid.
Well, it's time to be a man. Take responsibility for your actions, your fears, your regrets. Time to pay the price, boy.
Right.
So Lee, the latest victim, had a book called The Path, and it was written by John Hill, Joe Morton, who's a prisoner. And he seems to have sort of a cult following. And he preaches freedom from remorse, fear, and regret. I understand what he's saying, but it's kind of the opposite of what everybody else thinks, that you're supposed to be remorseful and blah, blah, blah. And he's teaching freedom from that.
Though we're surrounded by concrete and razor wire, I can show you more freedom than the men who hold the keys. Darkness has descended on this house. Death has returned to Riverton. And those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. Regret has no place in your life. Your only salvation is here.
It seems like the last warden saw that as paganism. We saw pictures of them taking these artifacts out and putting them in storage, these round things.
Right. Yeah.
Which was what John Hill had on his necklace, the necklace that they thought was an artifact.
Yeah.
We're going to pause right here for a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Doug here from Yeah, That Can't Be Good and the 13th Warehouse. If you are a fan of Warehouse 13, it is very likely you are also a fan of Eureka. If you aren't, you should be. Please join Kim, Vicky, Skip, and Doug Gramley over at Yeah, That Can't Be Good for an episode-by-episode podcast of all things Eureka. You can listen at EurekaRewatch.com, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. So I guess the old warden came in and brought religion to the prison, and apparently that cross, which we find out later, seemed to calm everything down. The new warden comes in and gets rid of anything religious. Pete and Micah, when they hear that the suicide started when she started there, they expect to find an artifact in her office, and there's nothing in her office. Her office is bare.
Yeah.
Because she got rid of everything. Their second suspect was John Hill because of the necklace he was wearing. Artie gets really concerned when they call him because they're both seeing dead people.
Pete saw his father, but you didn't, right?
Yeah, but I should probably mention that I saw Sam earlier.
What? Why didn't you say anything?
Well, you know, Sam's dead, and your father's dead. I mean, you can understand my reticence, right?
You're both hallucinating, and when were you going to mention that to me?
Well, we just did.
And there's a tropical storm. He reminds them that electrical energy cranks up the intensity of almost any artifact.
What was that?
Tropical storm Inez.
You didn't say that there was a storm.
Why is that important?
How many times do I have to tell you about electrical energy? It can crank up the intensity of an artifact, I don't know, tenfold. And if an artifact is causing these hallucinations, and a powerful electrical charge can make these visions seem absolutely real.
Well, they seem pretty real now.
Pete has a really nice moment with Micah. He's serious, because you know how I feel about him.
Right.
He's serious for a couple minutes, and he explains to her that she knows she did the right thing in Denver. And, you know, it doesn't matter what the report says, because she knows she did the right thing.
Yeah.
So somewhere along the line, Artie tells them that the prison must be the artifact, and there's something about quartz or a mineral, that's what it was. Micah discovers the prison was built over a quartz mine. So the quartz is what's causing the hallucinations. And this is when they figure out that prison is the actual problem.
Mm-hmm.
the warden must have something in storage that counteracted what was going on in the prison. And Artie said the way to counteract quartz is to find more quartz. So they find this quartz cross in storage.
Yes.
At the same time, everything goes crazy in the prison. And the only people that don't seem affected are John Hill and his followers.
Oh, yeah, true. Huh?
Yeah, all of the guards and the warden and everybody gets taken over by whatever is going on there. But Hill and his followers aren't affected, which I haven't really figured out why yet.
The only thing I can figure out is they came to peace. If you haven't letting it go.
That's right. You're right. Yeah, absolutely. They follow him and they don't have regret or remorse. You're right.
And then, you know, you'll see that later on with Pete and Michael.
Exactly. For some reason, that didn't even click with me. So everybody's trapped in their hallucinations, including Pete and Micah. Now, Pete remembers John Hill's words, and he confronts his father and says, I was a kid. I'm not responsible. He confronts his guilt. He knows it's not his fault.
The cruelest prison is the one we built for ourselves out of fear and regret. What? Not a day goes by that I don't miss you. But you would have gone to work that morning whether I would have warned you or not. And I have no more regret about not stopping you. And I have no more fear.
Out of fear?
That I did the wrong thing.
Regret has no place in your life.
It wasn't my fault. It's just it's who you were and who I try and be every day of my life.
And then what happened?
That he knows it's not his fault?
Yeah, but then what happens?
So he snaps out of it.
Snaps out of it, but they hug too.
Oh, true. Right.
He never got a chance to see his father after that. His father never came home, so he never got a chance to also hug his father. To me, it was very good that he got a chance, even though it wasn't really real. It felt real to him, and he was able to really come at peace. He confronted it. They hugged. He's done.
Yes, you're right. I totally forgot. And he does say, I feel like, even though it wasn't real, I feel like I got a chance to say goodbye.
Yes.
Yes, mm-hmm. You're right. But Micah, she has a harder time snapping out of it.
Sam? Sam?
The target is on the move. Let's move in.
Negative. Negative. The plan is to extract at the stairs. Sam, wait!
It's your fault. Late.
Was I?
Killed me, Bunny. Now you've got to make it right.
Pete is the one who gets her to snap out of it. Pete mm-hmm. again says, it's not your fault. You know it's not your fault. The only one responsible is the guy who shot him.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. But it takes a while for Micah to get over it. But she does get over it. And it was funny. They hug and everything, and then they get all uncomfortable that they had that moment. At that point, they replace the cross. They figure out where the cross was, and everybody snaps out of it. Now, before that, when they finally got the warden's door open, she shot John Hill. Not because it was John Hill, because she was in her hallucination.
Yes.
So he dies happy, and he smiles, and he dies happy thinking he was chosen for sacrifice. Now, because everything ended when he was shot, so in his mind, he thinks he was the one who ended it.
Okay. He's losing a lot of blood. We
no,
gotta get him
no,
out of here.
No. It's all right. He's chosen me for sacrifice. I'm on a new path.
But also, too, as far as Christianity goes, when they say you're doing the work of the Lord, and you brought people to the flock, or however people want to say it, you come at peace. So even when you do pass away, you're kind of squared away. It works both ways. He may be thinking that with the prison he's all set, but he's also all set with God.
Right, yeah, I figured that too, but it was the timing issue. He believes that him being shot caused everything to stop at the prison.
Yeah,
he really believes that he was the sacrifice and he was what they needed to stop whatever was going on. So he dies happy. Obviously, that wasn't true. The putting the cross back up was what stopped it all. But he dies happy thinking that he's, like you said, he's at peace.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though what he's thinking isn't 100% true, he's right. At peace. He doesn't know that. So then back at the warehouse, Micah decides not to open the envelope because it doesn't matter what it said. She's gotten rid of her guilt. She knows what she did was correct.
Mm-hmm.
And none of it was her fault. But I know you don't have notes because you have notes on the next one.
Yeah.
Do you remember?
No, that was basically it. And I thought it was pretty good. I liked the prison scenes, you know, and the warden. Yeah, she was all right. I think they should have picked somebody else a little bit more rougher, I guess.
Yeah.
But other than that, it was a good episode. I didn't mind it. Just another thing with Claudia. She's a kid in a candy store.
I know. And I know they have to come back to the warehouse once in a while. And most of the B plots are okay. It's just this one, I don't know. It wasn't interesting to me at all.
Mm-hmm.
She gets stuck. Artie fixes it. I don't even know what he did to fix it. Truck shows up. I don't know why. Because it's magnetized. And he's rubbing his feet on the carpet to make static, to make electricity. I don't know what the heck he was doing. But he fixed it.
Yeah, but the other thing, too, is the reason why she's up there, Artie's not listening again. He's blowing people off again.
Right, he is. She's saying the light's driving her crazy, which would drive me crazy.
Right.
And he says, well, they last forever. Well, that doesn't mean it's not blinking and driving me crazy.
Right.
And he's busy playing the piano. He's writing a song to bring his father closer to him. So that's kind of weird. First, we think his father's dead. Then we think he's not dead. He says he started writing it when he lost his father, so we think his father's dead, but it turns out he's alive.
Mm-hmm.
He thinks the song is going to bring his father closer to him. Now, what that means, I don't know. I'm sure we'll find out somewhere along the line, but that was kind of, you know, a clue to future episodes, I guess.
Yeah.
Because we don't know anything about Artie's family, really.
No. Uh-uh.
I remember sort of along the way we find out some things, but I can't remember specifics anymore. But we really don't hear anything about Artie's family.
Yeah, you're right.
So, can you think of anything else that we didn't talk about?
No, I want to say that's basically it.
All right. Well, then we will see you next week for episode 10. Bye.
Bye.
All right. You want me to bring you something back?
You know I don't eat sugar.
Right. Butter pecan, caramel sauce, chocolate sprinkles.
Okay, DC, tell us what's next.
Join us next time for season 1. Episode 10, Breakdown. Bye now.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, this is Doug Gramley reminding you to follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/the13thwarehouse, on Twitter and on Instagram at @Eureka_warehouse, on our website at the13thwarehouse.com or on Podbean. Theme music for the 13th Warehouse, Reflections in the Mirror, provided by Esther Garcia under their standard license. See you next time in the 13th Warehouses.
And we are now also available on Google Podcasts and Spotify. Our website, the13thwarehouse.com, will be updated with additional listening options as they become available.